Gagan, and you're listening to the Voice of Insurance podcast, produced in association with Advantage Go. Pick and choose your own best of breed insurtech and data providers with Advantage Go's ecosystem. Today's guest is well on the way to cracking a problem that has been vexing the market for 30 years, and something that I have been writing about specifically for the last 20. We all know that the process of syndication of risk in the London and other international insurance and reinsurance markets is full of inefficiencies and ripe for reform. But just because a problem has been around for a long time and has been well documented, it doesn't make finding and implementing a solution any easier. I've lost count of the number of insurance and reinsurance exchanges I've seen launch and then wither and die over the last two decades. Well, Gilbert Harrop, the CEO of InsureX, is someone who is setting out to change all of this. Many exchanges failed either because they were founded by people with little understanding of complex insurance, or they alienated their potential users, particularly the brokers, who often rightly or wrongly perceived them as a threat to their businesses. InsureX is different, because Gilbert is someone with market experience who is focusing on building a utility that could help both underwriters and brokers increase volumes and improve margins. This is a fascinating conversation with someone running a business that has already gained significant traction in two classes of business and is looking to expand across the board. Gilbert is one of us, and I think that's a big part of why InsureX has been well received. He's laser focused on helping brokers serve customers better while allowing underwriters to diversify in smart, new, cost-effective ways. He doesn't want to be an underwriter or a broker. He just wants to be the one connecting them using intelligent new methods that add value to both parties. I really enjoyed my time with Gilbert and left feeling that InsureX might be one of the first exchanges to make it in the complex syndicated risk space. I also ended this conversation feeling much more optimistic about the future of the London market and its prospects of increasing its global share of high-quality insurance business. Listen for yourself and see what you think. Enjoy the podcast. Gilbert, welcome to the Voice of Insurance.
Great to be here.
It's really good to have you on the show. Why don't you just introduce yourself to the listeners, tell us a bit about yourself and your career to date.
Yeah, sure. So I'm the CEO and one of the two co-founders at InsureX, and we're building a digital exchange for syndicated risk in the London market. I guess my kind of backstory, I started out as an underwriter, did that for about 6 years.
Where were you working?
And that was at Amlin. So I was on the sort of property cat underwriting side, kind of loved the industry, loved working with people in numbers. Kind of realized there's this real opportunity to think about kind of moving the market forward. There's a need for better use of data and digital technologies. And it kind of ended up moving more into a strategy role, becoming the head of strategy for their reinsurance business. And I did that for a few years. And then in that work, realized again that the market was really struggling to adopt maybe the digital technologies of the future that can make itself offer ultimately a better service to the client. And that made me start to think about some of the ideas that led to the formation of InsureX.
And that was your first job at Amlin? That was the first job, say, out of university, that kind of thing?
Yeah. So I did that straight out of university and did that very happily for 6 years. I went off and did an MBA, learned some of the tools to think about moving businesses forward, and then came back into that more sort of strategy role.
So how did you get the idea for InsureX? Obviously, you had a vague-ish idea about that you needed technology to do things better. When did it start to become more specific? Did you have a eureka moment or something?
Yeah, so there were a number of projects we were working on internally at Amlin, looking at how do we do more data-driven underwriting. And this was happening about the same time that John Neal came in and started launching the future of Lloyd's and what became Blueprint One. And it was kind of really out of all of that work going, there's a demand, the market wants to become more digital, more data-driven. Really struggling to do that. And I think it's not something that's new. The market's been sort of wanting to do this for a while, but I think it's realized that to stay relevant in the world, it really does need to do it now. And so it's kind of out of that work that I started to kind of actually say, how do we do this? How do we do it better? And realize there's a need for some sort of exchange working with brokers and insurers.
So you've got your MBA, you've got all this experience, you've got a problem to solve, and now you've got to think there's a certain way of solving it. So what is it?
Yeah, so I suppose at its fundamental, it's how do we use data flowing between brokers and insurers so that they can make more algorithmic underwriting decisions? And so it's that flow of data. And the market's always used data, but it's how do we use more of that data? And I think it's then how do we combine that in a model that actually enables the current market to be more effective rather than try and compete against it? So we really see ourselves as kind of building something that's more of a utility that empowers the current brokers and the current insurers to be more effective at what they do rather than tries to go, actually, let's try and compete against maybe what they're already doing today.
One of the reasons why I'm really keen to get you on the show is because, yes,
I was a broker in the early 90s and we had failed attempts at digitization. Then it was just simply electronic placing. So what is now effectively PPL, white space or whatever. But certainly there was that vision, there was that understanding, particularly once the internet had come around, that the internet certainly allowed for almost every industry in the world to think it could turn itself into some sort of exchange, and it was no different for insurance. And then I became a journalist, and I've been a journalist for about 20 years, looking at insurance very specifically, and have probably documented the failure of many, many businesses that would call themselves an insurance or a reinsurance exchange. What is it about yours that is different, that is sort of something that's non-threatening?
Yeah, so I think it's about doing something that both the brokers and the insurers can't do today and probably doesn't make sense for them to do. The analogy we often sort of talk about is it doesn't make sense for you to build a road to go to your mate's house, right? It makes sense to use a road network, right? Which is built as a utility. So sometimes there are kind of common assets which are useful to the market as a whole. Now, I think what we've done is the market, and PPL is a good example, it's building something that I think there's a fundamental need, but it's doing it for the whole market all at the same time. And that makes it really difficult to please any individual stakeholder and really give them something that's a competitive advantage. And what we're sort of doing is we're trying to build something for the market as a whole, but immediately give benefits to participants, whether they're brokers or insurers, that sign up and start using us. And so it's about that. Yeah, we're building a utility, but one that really helps people immediately as they sign up and get real commercial gain. And that's probably, I think, the flip. It's not just about the technology. It's about giving a real benefit, allowing a broker to better service their client or allowing an insurer to build a better portfolio for their capital.
Suppose if you were the first house on your street to actually get running water, you think, well, yeah, this is a great comparative advantage, particularly if you had a cafe in that house.
Yeah.
Then that's pretty good because very clear that that was a really good business and that was an excellent bit of added value and well done to the water company for connecting you up first. And then you could maybe have it spray out in certain the right ways you wanted, or you could have fountains in the gardens or something to make it even more spectacular. Is that the analogy?
I suppose it sort of is. That analogy of water companies and one company sending water to another, whereas I think what's really important on our network is that the companies trade with each other. And so the brokers trade with the insurers using the benefits of insurance's investment in technology. So maybe a phone network is almost a better analogy than the water kind of utility in that, like, if you have one phone, it's not very useful unless you can call your mate. When you both have phones, it now suddenly becomes really useful. And that's what phone networks in the 90s suddenly
did. And you'll encourage everyone else to get one. So, well, look, I can phone my friend, so why can't I phone you? I encourage my grandmother to get one as well, finally. And you know, and then everyone can phone everybody, and there we are.
Yeah, and I think that's it. And now what we're seeing, and you know, we're seeing some great traction. We've got 16 brokers signed up now that we're working with and 12 insurers. I think the more that are using it, the more useful it becomes. And the more they're saying, hey, look, I want to give you a call, can you sign up to the network? Because it's the easiest way to call you.
When I think of an exchange, I suppose I think like a stock exchange, like an order matching engine. I want to buy 10,000 shares in BP at no more than £2.13, and it's sitting on an order book, and then the sell side will go ferreting around as well. Actually, I can fill that order by 4,763 over here and then 5,327 over there, and then we'll be fine. And then, you know, I'll complete the order and bosh, and it'll suddenly come spat out at the end. Presumably, it's more complicated than that because we're talking about insurance.
Yeah.
It is obviously the great thing about stock exchange, nice and simple, that all BP shares are perfectly equal to each other.
It's just a unit of BP shares, whereas almost every placement is kind of unique. So, yeah, I think the sort of vision is the same as that kind of electronic exchange. But how we actually do it is probably really thinking about re-engineering the underwriting process so that we use large amounts of data, often provided by our broker partners, but sometimes by insurer partners as well, to allow insurers to evaluate portfolios of risk and write their algorithmic capacity rules in advance of when they see a submission, so that when that submission hits our exchange, we already know exactly what they want to do. And so in that kind of re-engineering, we instantly know when a risk gets presented to us, what an insurer wants to do on that risk. And that then allows us to kind of give, I guess, a far better service to the brokers than they might otherwise
get. So it's like you've got the sell side already sorted out. They're saying, I'm in the market for buying this risk off people at this price, at these kind of terms and conditions, at risks of these characteristics. Therefore, is it more like an MGA that effectively you've got some prearranged parameters under which you can definitely write something on behalf of the capacity? And are you therefore that layer of capacity between the broker and the underwriter, and you're effectively the underwriter rather than a pure exchange? Are you like structured like an MGA?
So we have some of the structural traits of an MGA. I would say we're not.
Is that the mechanism
MGA.
By which the insurance is delivered to the broker?
That's the mechanism. But but the difference is, and a really important difference is we're not underwriting. We're an exchange sitting in the middle. We do what the insurers tell us, whereas I think a traditional MGA, the insurer is really saying, I'm not going to underwrite. I'm going to have an agreement with someone else who underwrites on my behalf.
I'm deferring because you're an expert.
Whereas we actually flip that around and go, no, we want the insurers to underwrite on our platform, but we will provide them with data. They use that data to form what their appetite is, and then we offer that appetite out to the brokers. So it's kind of, it's definitely not an MGA. We are an exchange. And the fact that we can work with both sides of the market gives that real power, as a traditional MGA probably really focuses on a few big carriers rather than looking to work with the whole market.
What are you effectively doing? You're digitizing some of the underwriting philosophy and appetite of those markets, of those insurers, and then you're then making that easily available as capacity to those brokers. Is that the right way of putting it?
Yeah, so it is that. And that the real power of that, if you think about it from a broker perspective, brokers are trying to service their client, is that now you've got a party that you can interact with. Over 90% of our submissions last year, we turned around within 2 hours. We could tell a broker, we can give you capacity or not. And it's that kind of speed that is really powerful for the brokers to help them better serve their clients. So there's the serving up that faster decision-making process. I think there's also the fact that we're working with these new sets of data to actually help build new capacity for the market. And many of the insurer partners we work with would only offer their capacity out on this kind of data-driven portfolio basis. And that means we're actually creating new capacity for the market, as well as just allowing existing marketing capacity to be deployed in a way that's better for brokers.
Sorry to interrupt in mid-flow, but this is just a reminder that you could be advertising right here, right now, and getting your message directly into the ear of key decision makers in the insurance industry. And you'll be doing it while they're absolutely in listening mode. The podcast is the medium of the future, and so is audio advertising. Contact me on mark@thevoiceofinsurance.com and I'll do everything I can to get you started.
And then how do you get paid?
So benefits to the brokers are we work with them, they send the submission flow to us. We don't charge them, but they earn the existing commissions that they earn in the market today. So there's sort of no change there. If the brokers do share data with us in general, we can provide more capacity to them, so they get a greater benefit. On the insurer side, the insurers pay. They pay us a commission. So we have a kind of a very highly aligned fee structure that we are only charging if we're binding and creating something that's useful for them.
Is that a fix? Do you have a profit commission element as
well?
There's
no profit commission because, to our point earlier, we're not underwriting. It's the insurers that are underwriting.
You're the utility.
We're the utility. We're charging a commission. But that commission level does vary depending on quite how the party trades on our platform. And as you can imagine, it's the amount of volume they do and quite what they do on our platform does dictate that. But it's basically a fixed commission paid by the insurer once they've already had all the data to help them design their rules, once we've bound it, once we've reported that out to them. So it's pretty aligned to their own kind of benefits.
Yeah, you're almost answering my next question, which is certainly my experience of all these years of studying failed insurance exchanges. They've always failed because the brokers didn't want to use them. And they didn't want to use them often because they saw them as a threat, as something that was getting in the way between their relationship with the underwriter or something that might threaten their relationship with their own ultimate client. But here it sounds like you're doing everything to get absolutely out of the way of the broker and making everything easy, and that they get the same commission they would have done otherwise. They don't have to give you anything, and you're providing them with more capacity, so why wouldn't they use it?
Yeah, so I think, look, we're going, how do we make their life as easy as possible, which actually loosely translates into how do we free up their time to really focus on better serving their clients and better negotiating with lead markets to where they really add the value, which then allows them to, do a better job for their client. They're going to be more successful if they do that, rather than focus on the less value-creating parts of brokers. So it's really more, how do you, as a broker, become more a risk consultant rather than pay to just transact capacity placements.
Yeah, I just walk around the market and get 16 lines by queuing up and it takes me 3 days.
Yeah. The reality of that sort of job is something that, it's great for training people when they're kind of moving up and on the brokerage side, but it's not really where the heads of lines at brokers, where they're focusing on. They're thinking about, how do I grow my business? How do I serve clients better? Not on how do I focus on the kind of walking around the market more.
Is it right to say that those brokers are definitely much more focused on that kind of thing these days in terms of their business management, that they don't want to spend money on paying people to queue up to see underwriters anymore?
The reality is it's a transition, right? I think the senior leadership teams generally of almost all the brokers in the market are saying, look, this is really powerful. We want to use it to help grow our businesses and quite frankly, bring more business into the London market. I think there's a transition. You know, some people, this is a change in what they need to do. People who are currently focusing heavily on placement probably need to think about, well, what are they going to do in this kind of new growing world? But it's more like those people are still going to be very useful. I think they can do more useful things, focusing on how to better serve those clients and bring more business into the market.
When you talk to some of those senior managers who are looking at the numbers, at what sort of savings are they expecting to make when they're using you to help finish off things?
I mean, I think you could quantify it in kind of like the amount of hours are spent out on the road, the amount of sort of shoe leather. You know, I'd reframe that. How much is this helping them win new business into the market? And we're seeing quite substantial increases for the teams that are using it today. And then the kind of the actual amount of margin they're making, the sort of difference between their gross commission, which, as we said, doesn't change, and their bottom line, that margin is significantly improving. And a lot of teams now are really incentivized to bring that into the market.
Yes, yes, yes. I'm sure new business is particularly well rewarded, isn't it? Because it becomes annuity business after time, hopefully, when we keep renewing it.
Just one point on that, which is the really big brokers, the sort of big three in the market, they've been focusing on really doing that. If you look at what they've been doing over the last 10 years, they've been doing it anyway. What we're doing is bringing that benefit to everyone to some degree. And so it's kind of, yeah, it's just making sure that everyone can benefit from that sort of efficiency benefits.
Yeah. And what's your typical carrier that's backing you? Is it one of these more modern progressive types who are looking at portfolio underwriting, that kind of thing, who's looking to say, well, I'll want to be a follower, I want to diversify and get some exposure to these different classes? Is that the sort of player that you're talking to, or is it all sorts?
Yeah. So what are we doing? Like, fundamentally, we're making syndication in the London market more efficient using data and new digital technologies. Look, we have leaders. We've got someone like Atrium, who's one of our fantastic partners in the property space. They're using our platform to gain relevance. They share some data with us. That helps us attract quite a lot of capacity behind them. So it's really backing up their underwriting. They're now more relevant to their distribution. Their distribution likes it because they can offer even more capacity behind someone like Atrium to their markets. We've got someone like Convex, who is trading us in the contingency vertical, and they're really looking at saying, we're already doing contingency business, but is this a more efficient way to trade and offer capacity out to our current distribution partners? And then there's others who, you know, someone like Beazley, who are working with on their smart tracker syndicate, who are looking at this and saying, look, this is already something we're doing with maybe the bigger brokers. How can we offer this out to other people? So there's kind of, because we're a utility, you're never quite sure how they're going to use it. So that, you know, once you give people phones, you don't know what they're going to say on the phone, but it's pretty powerful. You're allowing them to have that connection.
Which classes have you said contingency? Certainly that was one that I was aware that you had made inroads into, particularly, I suppose, contingencies had a hard market, a very hard market post-COVID. It's had a difficult time, and obviously it's had market withdrawals and a bit of turmoil and dislocation.
Yeah.
Properties, obviously, we know it's been hard and difficult for the last, you know, three, 4 years. These are the places where you've made the first wins, isn't
it? Yeah, look, we're always really clear. Like, Insurex, we're not trying to be a broker. We think brokers are best at doing that. We're not trying to be a carrier and underwrite risk. That we think the carriers are best at doing that. We want to be that utility in the middle, being that exchange in the middle. And to do that, we really add value to our partners by doing as many classes as possible. So yeah, we're live today in contingency and property. We definitely have both broker and insurer partners wanting us to do quite a bit more in other classes. If we look at the kind of dynamics of why are we getting so much traction in contingency and property, I think there's some common themes, right? So contingency, you brought it up. Yeah, it was a really hard market, massive losses in COVID, quite a few people pulled out of that class. As the kind of world opened back up, brokers were going, we really need capacity. So there was a kind of fundamental need. I think what's been really interesting is as we've helped bring more capacity into that market, it has then moved on from just being, yeah, the capacity is useful, to we're actually giving a better service to our clients because we can now turn around the request for capacity far, far quicker than we used to. And so, yeah, maybe it starts with capacity, but then it starts to become, how does this actually help us give a better client service, is probably what we'll see in other markets.
And with this data question, do you bring in third-party data as well when you can? Is that something you could do? Because that would be a good thing that the utility might be able to do, because obviously it's something that the underwriter hasn't got and the broker hasn't got, and why not?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think we sort of think about data as the kind of, there's the data we can get from our broker and insurer partners, but there's also data we can get from third-party partners. And so I think we also think about people like RMS, who've got great risk analytics. So that's the sort of powerful sources of data you can bring in. But there's other better kind of structured data on, say, legal entity information, which we're just missing as a market, and having better data flowing around will be really, really powerful. So yeah, we're doing that today. I hope to do a lot more with that third party data over the next couple of years as we get more and more data flowing through our utilities pipes.
And then another impediment to some of these things has been that people were very kind of clingy to their data and saying, well, I don't really want to share this with anyone. You know, I want to keep this to myself. This is my secret sauce. You know, I've got this sort of 300 years of fire data going or whatever. I know anything about marine hull going back to the days of Nelson. Have you overcome that? Or has there been a bit of, certainly I get a vibe that there's been a bit of a cultural change in the market that people have understood that actually if you share things, you get more benefit.
I think that's it. So what we've really focused on is people understand, we go, just like personal data, I don't want to share my data unless I get a benefit from it. And I think what we've realized is that if we can create the right framework and the right way to control who gets access to data, then parties are actually really up for sharing their data if they get a commercial gain. They won't just share it just for the sake of it. But if they can get a tangible benefit from it, parties will share that data. So we've really kind of sort of tapped into that. There's kind of another interesting point around data, which is everyone's got loads of data. It's often not in usable form. You need it to be structured. It needs to be well managed. And that's what Insurex is doing, is working. We've got a big data science team. My co-founder, Will, he's a data guy by background. It's bringing better data discipline to the market in a way that's actually useful for players and helping to kind of teach and spread that to our partners. So yeah, I think there's a real role for Insurex to help standardize how data flows around the market in kind of really useful ways. We're really excited about what Lloyd's is doing with the kind of MRC3 and those various other initiatives. It's making sure that that's kind of, some of those benefits are delivered quicker and in a way that people can get commercial gain.
MRC3 is the market reform contract, the third version of it, which is effectively...
means there's been two more versions beforehand.
Yeah. They have, yes, was the original one, yes. And which I remember, I didn't remember two, but three, I suppose it's effectively the... I think we had to rename it. They were going to call it the iSlip or something, or the digital slip.
But IMRC,
but it's not quite digital enough, I don't think, yet, but it will be. And this is stemming from the work that the Data Council has been doing. So this is about standardizing digital information for insurance for the London market.
Yeah.
So you get your hands quite dirty then. So brokers are, I've got this contingency risk, here it is. And you can then sort of leap in and start extracting some of that data and doing the hard work of extracting data and the sort of painful stuff.
Yeah. So by the time it's an individual broker comes to us with a contingency risk, we've already done a lot of work. We've already done a lot of structuring work with a carrier to come up with that appetite. So when that individual risk is sent to us, we then look at that risk and go, what data points are in that? And what can we then use to trigger underwriting capacity or not? It's about, we have a role to help structure that data that maybe the broker hasn't been able to structure in a way that's kind of really useful for an insurer so that you can then make that underwriting decision on
it. With that, is it, you know, the venue, the age of the artist, the how long the tour's been going on for already? Is it the 57th tour date in 57 days and then the person's going to lose their voice by the end?
Yeah, so I mean, there are some standard things that you'll imagine, things like who's the slip leader and right, when's the inception date?
Yeah.
But we've actually found that carriers have developed these much more nuanced rules, like is there exposure in a US state during the North American wind season, right? And it's kind of how these complicated rules net together that can kind of really drive a value that we can allow those carriers to have those nuanced rules that a broker wouldn't be able to imagine or store in their head, all these really complicated rules. But actually from a data and using digital systems, it becomes very easy to do.
And so the broker's getting the benefit of that education, and they can also educate their clients, say, by the way, if you give us these five extra data points, we'll be able to get much more pinpoint accuracy with what we think the price is going to be.
Yeah, and I think that's the feedback loop that's kind of becomes really powerful. If you share more structured data, you will get better, faster capacity. And that's almost what we're rewarding. We're rewarding those brokers and the clients that can share more data in a better format with more capacity.
The best brokers were always the ones that knew exactly, particularly the wholesale ones. You know, they'd come and visit you. And when I was a retailer in another country, a wholesale broker from London would come and visit and they could practically desk quote everything. They knew exactly what this was going to cost. And it was very, very good to know them. And yeah, when you sent them the risk, yeah, the quote did come back and it was pretty much what they said it would be. And there were very rarely any surprises.
Yeah. Often we sort of talk about our vision, you know, what does Insurex really want to achieve? And it's that a broker, whether they're based in the world, say a San Francisco-based broker, can sort of fire over risk to London when they're leaving the office. And by the time they've woken up the next day, the London broker has got it quoted off by a leader and then has got a stack of follow capacity all lined up. And you can then say to that broker, London is ready to bind. What would you like us to do? And I think that sort of changes the paradigm from London being the market of last resort to actually London's the best market to use because it gives us the best answers, the fastest answers. Yeah.
It's another button. I should be pressing this button because I'll get the answer back so quickly. Why wouldn't I?
Yeah.
Rather than wait for, it could go into black hole for 2 weeks and not come back, which is what used to happen.
Yeah. And I think, you know, sort of London's known for its underwriting, the capability of underwriting that sits within sort of EC3. It's really, how do we kind of make sure that's open, available, accessible as easily as possible? And that's what Insurex is doing. It kind of enables the sort of broking community to do it large.
Obviously, those two markets we've had the traction have been hard markets. You kind of hinted at this before, but if I put it to you, if I was investing in it, I said, well, isn't this just a hard market thing? And when it all just kind of recede back to its more natural channels, you know, in the comfortable channels that they were in before the hard market, what would you say to that?
I would say, would you like to operate with a model that cuts off significant expense, right? That doesn't just happen in a hard market. It happens in a soft market. In a soft market, you're looking at your expense going, I want it to be lower and I want it to be more flexible, right? Adjusted to my cost base. So tick, you know, Insurex delivers that. In a soft market, you're generally going, I need to be really tight on underwriting standards. I need to really understand what I'm underwriting. Would you like to have more data that Insurex can support? Yeah, tick. Yeah, we can deliver that. So I actually think what we're talking about with Insurex is kind of, it's powerful in hard markets. It's powerful in soft markets. I think it kind of is powerful across the cycle. It's how do people best take advantage of what's really probably a structural change rather than a kind of, okay, it's going to be here in the hard market. I think traditionally facilities have existed in soft markets and gone away in hard markets. I think what we're talking about is more of a structural change to how the market trades.
At the moment, you're in the London Lloyd's and Company market. I mean, there are other wholesale insurance hubs and syndicated hubs in the world. I mean, none of them are quite like London, but is it something part of your plan at some point that you would be going out to the Singapores and the Dubais and the...
Yeah, look, absolutely. We think this fundamental problem of how do clients better get matched by brokers, I think it's key that brokers are serving those clients with insurers, is a fundamental problem that exists across insurance markets. That said, right now, there's this massive opportunity in London. There's a massive amount of talent here. There's a massive amount of business already coming here that can be better served. So I think for the next couple of years, we're going to be super focused on delivering as much of those benefits to London market brokers and to London market carriers. Will it make sense for us to start doing things in some of the other markets? Absolutely. In the US E&S market, there's a massive opportunity for this. I think in the Bermuda market, treaty reinsurance, definitely. We're already doing a little bit with some Bermudan carriers. So we've got one Bermudan carrier who's providing capacity to one of our London partners. And I think we'll start to see more of that. But it'll be really, how do we really turbocharge what we're doing here in London and then start to bring that benefits abroad rather than set up flags all around the world?
Yeah, I mean, you've got 100 billion here to play with. So you might as well get that in your pocket before you start looking for other bits of treasure elsewhere in the
world.
Yeah,
I think it's kind of, you know, normally when people are launching businesses, they go, okay, well, yeah, I can launch a business in the UK, but I'll have to go to the US to get big. I think the thing that we're really lucky about in London is there's a massive market here that we can get big, that we can really prove out our business model and then look to take it abroad.
With something like this, it's an exchange, so it doesn't actually have to go anywhere, does it? It's in the ether.
Yeah, the simple reality is the exchange is some technology and some data standards. Anyone can look to plug into that. So I think, do we already have that to extent today? Yeah, think about how many of the insurers are owned by foreign capital. How many of the brokers are owned by foreign capital? It's a massive amount. It's already happening. I think what you'll see is a lot more of this, or it's how do we link up the nodes in the network better? That's really what we're doing.
What do you think the business is going to look like in 5 or 10 years? And you don't really have a product. Well, you have a product, you have a utility, but is it going to, do you think you have any plans for it developing or changing that your star product might be something different in some point in the future?
Yeah, look, I think we're going to be really heavily focused on making syndication of risk better. And so there's a hell of a lot we can do there. You talked about the 100 billion market and that's in the London market today. I think there are big opportunities. We've had some of our broker partners already approach us saying, can you get involved in the delegated space? Can you help us better communicate opportunities in that space to carrier partners? So I think once we've got something that's really working, is delivering in what we're doing in the syndicated space, yeah, we will definitely look at how do we take this out to delegated or to sort of business that's placed 100%. I think there's a big opportunity in treaty reinsurance. There's a number of those who have been playing around with this idea. And, you know, it's something that we'd really like to do when the time's right. But again, it's kind of making sure that you do one thing really well and then expand from there rather than trying to spread yourself too thin.
And what sort of traction have you had so far? I mean, how many of you are there and what sort of GWP is going through the system right now?
We started last year with two brokers and three insurers. We're now today, I think with latest count, we're 17 brokers, 12 insurers signed up across those first two vertical contingency and property. We've got about 100 million of capacity committed to the exchange as of today across those two lines. And we're looking at that's a number that's going up pretty quickly. So if you were to ask me, look, where do I think this is going to be towards the end of the year? The aspiration is probably to get a few more brokers. We've already working with most of the big names out there. And probably to get up to more like 20 insurers, and then really just drive those benefits into those partners who we can have a real impact on their business models.
An ambition, you'd always want to stay as a utility. You wouldn't want to be sourcing your own capacity. You always want to be connecting capacity to demand.
Look, our value is being a technology company, working really effectively with data, helping brokers and insurers better link up together. We want to be those roads that we talked about, the network linking them together. So we've got absolutely no aspiration to try and become a broker. We think the brokers are much better at managing big global distribution networks, working out how to service clients. Equally, running a balance sheet, that is a complicated thing to do. And we want to really just focus on technology and data and better linking those parties together.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, you've worked as a balance sheets company, you know what it's like, you know, regulatory concerns, you've got to be nice to the rating agency, you've got to spit out different things that they're all looking at and they're pouring over your data. And, you know, there's all those different types of pressures. It's not just the underwriting part.
Yeah, the reality of running a balance sheet, particularly if you're doing it in the London market, is you've probably got the PRA, you've probably got the FCA, you've probably got Lloyd's, then you've got your own capital provider all over you looking at everything that's going on. So there's a lot of stakeholders to manage, and that's before you've even started to think about the client, which has got to be king. So that's a complicated model, and I think one of the things we think is really powerful about us being an independent exchange, and I stress that because there's a number of even our broker partners and insurer partners who are sort of thinking about building their own, just really complicated to do, to try and be both a broker and build this sort of technology and build those benefits of an exchange. And so we think there's a great alternative partner with someone like InsurX that is independent, that can give you access to all your partners on the other side of the marketplace.
And so, obviously, your business is automating follow capacity at the moment. How far do you think it will go if we're sitting here in 15, 20 years' time, perhaps? What percentage of the premium that's written here do you think will be automated follow capacity?
Yeah, so look, I mean, if you think about your kind of your 100 billion number, we can argue around, but it's give or take what the London market does today. Probably the leads are taking 20, maybe 25% of that. And then the rest of it is that 75% is being put with some sort of follow, right? And what we're really saying is, look, both parts of that, we think there's a real role to have smarter leads who are using more data in their actual underwriting process and then have capacity stacked up behind them. And so we're already helping that today. I don't think we're directly going to do the broking, but I think we may help with data transfer in the future. And then on the follow, we see very little reason why would you not want that follow to be automated. If you're thinking from a broker perspective, if you're thinking from a client perspective, if you want to give better outcomes to them, you want that to be as automated as possible. So I guess, yeah, the world we see is a broker gets a lead line and then all of their follow is automated. So, you know, some of that will be very algorithmic, some of it will be sort of pre-negotiated with partners, but kind of powered by a network like InsurX.
And I suppose you still have those second opinions of the market, because if you've put the wrong price into the market, the follow might will say, well, sorry, you know, the red flag will fly up, well, steam will start coming out of it and start saying, sorry, I'm not following you.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, right. Yeah, I got the price 10 times too cheap.
Yeah, and I think there needs to be, and you know, one of the beauties of how our rules are constructed is you can put those safeguards in. You can say, I will not accept a price below this, or we've seen in the data that this particular leader is behaving badly. I want to shut off my capacity to them. So it's really allowing what probably already happens in the market today just to be replicated in a more data-driven algorithmic environment.
Yeah, it might have been a quiet word in the club or somewhere, you know. Now it can be far more instant feedback, I suppose. Like, actually, yeah, you know, you're a bit keen at the moment. No one wants to follow you anymore.
And the brilliant thing is that appears almost instantly in the data, and you can then query it and go, am I happy about what's happening? It's about how do we kind of speed up the feedback loop, I suppose.
So at the moment, you've got a huge amount of runway automating follow business to algorithmic standards, to the standards of those capacity providers, those parameters that they're setting. What about, you talk about a really smart leader. Could we get to the point where you're enabling a smart leader to quote business automatically as well with some sort of AI?
We often talk about today, so much of the business we trade is done on like a very bespoke basis where the broker gets the lead terms and then they get all the follow terms and it's all sort of stacked up together. And that takes quite a long time. we think about the future is that some of that will exist, but a lot less. And then much more of that will either be where a broker goes and get lead SAMs and then they get sort of automated follow behind substantially everything they do, or where they actually go to a platform and they can access digital distribution. And I think you're already seeing that there's a number of firms in the market that have these portals, or Canopus with their Vave platform.
Yeah.
There's Atrium, they've got Atrium Gold. So there's a number of these kind of...
Aegis have done a lot of business that way as well.
And Aegis have done a lot of business that way. So it's already happening. Is there a role for us to help those carriers that are already offering 100% placed business on it? Absolutely. In the same way that customers like going to a money supermarket and being able to compare, do you think US brokers like logging on to 5 or 10 different portals?
No.
They want to have some sort of platform that helps say, if you've got a risk like say this, these are going to be the best insurers. And I think there's definitely a role for us to help on that, kind of facilitate that lead placement. But that's definitely more like the 5 year plus away. Today, we're really focusing on improving that risk syndication.
I think that's a very sensible thing. I suppose I couldn't have a podcast in 2024 and not ask you about AI. When you're going and diving into that broker's submission, presumably you're trying to get as much of that to be automated via AI. There's a lot of that going on at the moment, going and stripping out all the information from a PDF or spreadsheet or the sort of thing that brokers love to attach to their emails when they're asking for a quote.
There's definitely a massive role for AI to play in our industry. I think we need to improve data standards to sort of really allow that to happen at scale. I think there's a real role for AI actually to help in that kind of creating structured data, right? As you said, so much of the submissions that are flying around the market are an email with multiple attachments. Is there a way that we can use AI to structure that information into something that then you can run algorithmic rules or parameters over that? Absolutely. And I think we're starting to see that. We're definitely working with some of our partners on that.
More about you personally. You're an entrepreneur. You've done all this stuff. You've got your job and then you realize that you want to run your own business. You've got an MBA. You've got off the ground. You've got traction, which is something really difficult to do. What sort of entrepreneur are you? Are you the sort that likes seeing a problem and seeing a way of fixing it and proving that it works and then maybe get bored and move on and do something and find another exciting problem to solve? Or are you the sort of who wants to say, right, this is the snowball that I've started rolling down the hill and you want to keep it rolling forever?
The reality is I'm from this market. A bit like you, I kind of love the market. There's something special about it. I also realized there's this massive opportunity. So I'm not coming into it going, I'm an outsider, a disruptor. I want to come in, build something for a couple of years and then sell it.
Yeah.
That doesn't excite me. What do I do? So no, I absolutely, we want to build something very big that we think this is a structural transformation, how the market operates. Why would I not want to be doing that for 10, 20 years? That's the current plan. We think we've got partners on board that want to do that. We thought about how we're building our business in a way that allows us to do that. So will Insurex be here in 10, 20 years as the independent exchange? That's the plan. That's how we're structuring ourselves. That's what me, that's my co-founder, that's what our investors and advisors want to achieve.
The way we've been talking, it sounds like there's so many more things of phase two, phase three, phase five of what we could be doing here that are actually currently still fantastical. We know that they're likely to happen at some point in the future, but they're not going to happen yet. So there's always lots more things to look forward to. I suppose you're never going to get bored.
Danger of comparing yourself to Jeff Bezos and Amazon. But, you know, when he launched Amazon, he talked about it's sort of day one of the internet. You know, they were so early in the journey when they were doing it in the kind of the late 90s. And I feel like we're probably the same thing in insurance. The world, there's so much risk around. The world's getting richer. It needs to do more risk transfer. And we have this amazing market that needs to become more efficient to deal with. And we've got that opportunity to work to achieve that.
You mentioned that Future at Lloyd's document, which is a wonderful document because it was sort of, it had already got to the end game without having to do all the hard bits. And obviously Blueprint 1, Blueprint 2, I'm sure we're going to end up with Blueprint 3 and 4, prove how hard it is to actually even enact a tiny amount of those. But yes, it's fun that you've almost taken some of those ideas. There were different interesting case studies of different ways of doing business that could be enabled as long, if we were fully digital. And it seems like you've actually done one of those. So I've kept that one specifically on my desk, but now it's covered over in hundreds of other papers and things that I've printed off since. So I must tidy my desk and have read it up. See, but there must be loads of other business models in there that we need to follow up.
I think so. I think that, you know, we often look through that. I think there was 12, maybe 13 different chapters in it. And each one was like, there's a big problem here. The market needs to try and work out how to solve it. And I think one of the challenges of that is that it's a brilliant document. It's put together by sort of McKinsey, having spoken to everyone in the market. So it was this really powerful sort of product vision piece. It was quite short on, like many plans, was actually how to do it, right?
Yeah, where do you start?
Where do you start? How do you do that? Is it Lloyd's job job to do that? Is it the associations? Is it individual? You know, is it brokers? Is it insurers? Is it third parties like Insurex? And I think it was great for that kind of division. It probably should have spelled out more how we're actually going to achieve that. And what we've done is we looked at that and went, there's a real opportunity for a company to come in and deliver some of those benefits. And ultimately, we took that, we built a business case around that and presented that to Lloyds, to the Lloyds Lab. And they said, look, we love that idea. Come in here. We'll help incubate you. We'll help introduce you to partners. We'll help make that happen. Much of our success really comes from the market giving back in that way.
I suppose we should give some kudos to the Lloyds Lab because there's another Lloyds Lab success story. In fact, you're still in the Lloyds Lab, but I think you know you're a paying customer.
I say, unfortunately, I think it's actually, it's great for the ecosystem to have us as a paying customer back into it, feeding back into that. Look, I think what the Lloyds Lab team have achieved is fantastic. There's now, it's certainly more than 100 companies that are making a real impact. And I think there's actually a bit of a lesson learned there in many ways. It's not all about central solutions. It doesn't all need to be one massive project with a big UK consulting firm or accountancy firm trying to deliver that. There's actually a real role for individual companies to come in and go, there's a problem there. And actually, if we build a solution, both parties or a party will use it and we can deliver benefit. That's what we're doing. That's what a lot of the other really successful Lloyds Lab companies are doing. And I think the more we can drive that ecosystem, the better.
Well, Gilbert, thank you so much for your time. And yeah, more power to you, Elbow. Good luck with everything that you're doing. I'm thinking you can tell I'm a bit of fat. I've been waiting for someone to do this and to get this kind of thing off the ground and get the traction. So now you've done it. Keep going and make sure you come back for an update at some point in the future.
Yeah, I'd love to do that. And you know, your questions about kind of what we'll be doing in the future, I'd love to, you know, 3 years time, I'll come back and tell you.
It'll be definitely slightly different from whatever we imagined, I'm sure, but hopefully we'll be well advanced.
Yeah, look, the fundamentals are our brokers and our carriers want to do a better job for their customers. Absolutely. Are they going to want to do that likely with digital technologies? Absolutely. Is there a role for someone like Insurex to play in that? We absolutely think so. And we're going to be servicing those partners to deliver as much benefit as we can.
Gilbert, thanks very much for your time.
Brilliant. Thanks, Mark.
Well, I hope you enjoyed today's episode. If you did, don't forget to subscribe or leave a like or a review or recommendation on whatever podcast platform you used to access this program. These really help get the word out. Before we go, just a quick reminder that advertising slots are available here and in other places in the Voice of Insurance podcasts. Podcasting is the fastest growing medium and attracts a high quality audience of key decision makers. It's also an intimate medium where you, the listener, are right in the room with me and the interview subjects. Needless to say, that means it's a great way of getting your message out directly to an audience because you know you've got their full attention. It's also very cost effective. So get in touch with Mark at thevoiceofinsurance.com to find out how you could be speaking directly to the industry. The Voice of Insurance is produced in association with Advantage Go. Release your underwriters to underwrite with Advantage Go's underwriting platform. Voice of Insurance is produced by me, Mark Gagan. Music was written by Anna Gagan and produced by Carlos Gagan. Check out more podcasts and written comment pieces at www.thevoiceofinsurance.com.